Everyone, welcome back. Episode 29, Fundamentally Sound Podcast. Should we call it maybe episode 29, but version 2? Because this is the first week we're going to be doing two podcasts in 1 week.
That is the first time. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to keep calling it episode 29.
I know, but this feels like the fork in the road.
This feels a little different because we know there's something else coming.
Right. So for those of you that haven't listened yet, we're obviously doing a couple live shows at Queen City Exchange in Cincinnati. The first one being Friday, October 27th at 6:30 with myself in at the bar with Rick Browering, who covers Xavier for a bunch of different sites. He's an awesome, awesome guy. So we're going to be doing our
great show. Name, too. Yeah, great name.
He's an awesome
Browering?
Guy. Yeah.
I like that.
So we'll be doing our Big East preview that night with the live show. Ben's going to be Skyping in. Obviously, on a Friday, it makes it a little bit difficult to travel and everything like that, as opposed to Saturday shows, which we'll be doing Saturday, December 9th, which if you want to mark that one down, too, where Ben will be in Cincinnati. But obviously, we try to practice a little bit. I guess practice is the right word. So we're going to be doing a trial run this Sunday down at Queen City Exchange, just Ben and I, just testing out the sound and how everything's going to work. So we're going to need your help. Obviously, we're in the middle of conference previews. For that one, it's just going to be Ben and I. We're going to be doing a season preview mailbag. So it's going to be a shorter episode just because we're going to be doing a trial run. So if you have questions regarding the season, regarding anything really, send them over. That's going to be the show on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, we have our new segment. And Fouled Out, yeah. And that's mostly that what we do is, you know, our questions to each other. That's a perfect opportunity to just have like a full mailbag full of random nonsense.
Yeah, because we'll probably do like a 30 to 40, you know, it'll be a little shorter show than normal, 30 to 40 minutes.
Just so we have
something
sound, yeah. And know what the heck we're doing.
Right, because we're God only knows what's going to happen. So, but
I foresee some issues.
There's going to be problems, 100%. But the one way you can avoid any problems is showing up. You can listen.
Yeah. Show up, listen, and then also we're going to do our part and actually test and be adults that are trying to make this thing work.
Right. So shout out Queen City Exchange. Shout out anybody that's coming up. And again, let us know on Twitter if you're going to make either show, because I know Rick and I will be hanging out after the show on Friday, October 27th, having beers and talking to people. And then Ben and I will be – and we're having a ton of guests – show up on Saturday, December 9th to do little segments. It's going to be a long show. It's going to be watching basketball. It's going to be us drinking. So we're going to be hanging out there all day. So if you're coming, let us know. Obviously, we'd love to talk to everybody. But let's get into it. Episode 29, another conference preview. Got my guy, Chris Stone, good friend of the program. He's an awesome writer. I really enjoy reading his stuff. He does all college basketball and NBA draft stuff for Fansided, Rush to Court, and the Step Back. Draft stuff goes on Step Back. College basketball stuff goes on the first two. And he's a Kansas guy, so some real good insight from, I mean, let's be honest, one of the most dominant programs in college basketball, especially this run of just winning the Big 12.
I feel like they don't get the credit they deserve for that.
Yeah, I'm going to get into that later with Chris. I want to save that. I want to save that for later because I have a spiel on that.
Okay, well then let's jump into our players.
Yeah. So 29 sucks. Garbage.
No, 28 is way worse. Like even just like from the talent to pick from.
I don't know.
I had to go with Jason Capono and he wore 28 for 1 year.
Yeah. So I'm going with Patricio Garino just because my man played for Argentina in the Olympics last year. George Washington guy. Was on the Spurs for a little bit. Now he's on the Magic. I forget if he's still on the Magic or not. But shout out Patricio Garino.
Beno Udrich. Oh. What's your beef?
I never enjoyed him.
Don Nelson.
I mean, Coach Don Nelson, but Not Celtics Don Nelson.
short Don Nelson. Not a fan.
Yeah, no, thank you. So yeah.
Well, you're right. I'm not claiming to say that 29 is awesome. Like, I don't want to spend time talking about Beno Foudris or Don Nelson whatsoever.
Yeah,
I just think it's better than 28.
I mean, they're both garbage numbers.
Very much so. By the way, I didn't even ask you this. Did you start Game of Thrones? Because
I have five episodes left. I'm down the last five episodes.
Holy. Okay.
I went on. I've been slow lately. I had a great, like, just 2-week binge session. I knocked out a season essentially, like, over a day and a half, 2 days.
So I'm still unemployed. And today I took the leap of faith to get started.
Shout out to our sponsors. Our guy needs money over here.
Yeah, I am hooked. I'm hooked. Number one, I'm a weird person. I love Star Wars. I probably had more.
What's crazy is I hate.
I know you do. I know you.
But I like Game of Thrones. Yeah.
I had more fun watching the Star Wars trailer at halftime than watching the Bears game, and I'm a huge Bears fan and looking for any ray of sunshine, which I'm excited about Mitchell Trubisky.
How'd you enjoy my tweet about that game last night reminding me of Wisconsin-Virginia at 11 a.m.?
I didn't see that, I'm glad I did.
I tweeted at halftime when it was 3-2.
I was locked into the trailer.
I mean, I was
– But yes, that felt the most predictable thing at a 3-2 score is your Twitter feed flooded with baseball jokes.
Yeah, well, I went with Wisconsin-Virginia 11 a.m. game.
That is a little more clever. That's a little more clever. I like that, actually, because I would embrace that.
Right.
I would be up at 11. Let's play some defense. Let's get some rebounds. Yeah. Let's run it. Let's run it 30 seconds, miss a shot in offense, rebound, run it 30 more. Two possessions in a minute.
Bet the under.
I don't care what the line is. The line could be 85 under.
It'd probably be 3-2 at halftime.
3-2 at halftime.
But yeah, I like Game of Thrones, man. I hate all that. Like, I hate fantasy shit. I hate it.
Fantasy shit hates you.
It's just not my cup of tea. Not my thing. But I went all in on Game of Thrones.
Star Wars, Harry Potter. And you know what? Game of Thrones, I guess I'm early in it, but I still, even with the dragon stuff, I still wouldn't call it fantasy. You know what I mean? It's got a realistic feel, like the medieval times type feel.
Who's the best looking female character on that show?
I don't know. A lot of the.
You're taking way too long to answer. There's a correct.
I mean, it's Emilia Clarke.
Yeah, that's the correct answer.
I mean, it is. Like, there's no doubt about
that. You're also on season one, so you still haven't gotten.
Is there more talent added?
I mean, Sansa turns out to be hot, but.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, but I mean, it's no Dany. Like, Dany's number one. Cersei cuts her hair.
They should be glad because, you know, if you're picking somebody as, like, who's going to be a queen and marry somebody and all that nonsense, well, then they better actually end up being, like, gorgeous because she's still, like 13 with where I'm at in the program. So
right. That's
when she grows up.
Like.
Yeah, it's really weird. They're just very lucky that she ended up hot from what you tell me.
All right, so let's get into the interview with Chris. Plenty to talk about. We're going to talk about the Big 12. We're going to talk about something going on. We touched on a little bit with Jordan Cornette about when to start the season. Because some of this is – I put a tweet out there. We'll get into this regarding the 24-hour marathon no longer being a thing. So I'm going to ask you and Chris about that. I have a thought.
Yep.
And so we'll get into that. A ton of Big 12 talk. Some NBA draft talk, obviously, within the Big 12 conference. So, again, this is going to be Chris Stone. You can follow him on Twitter at CStoneHoops. Writes for Fansided, Rush to Court, Step Back. Great dude. So, again, Chris Stone. All right, as we mentioned, this is our interview with Chris Stone, good friend of the program, one of my favorite writers to read. Writes for Fansided, Rush to Court, and the Step Back. As I mentioned, you can follow him on Twitter at CStoneHoops. Brought him on to talk Big 12 because, you like to deny it that you now don't live there anymore, but you're a Kansas guy.
I am. I went to Kansas twice, so I think that makes me qualify as a Kansas guy. I've spent many a time in the Allen Fieldhouse.
It's how insane is it that they're still favored to win the Big 12?
Not insane, insane at all.
Yeah, I guess I kind of thought that this might be a year where, like, West Virginia is going to be really good and they could get challenged in the Big 12 this year, but the more that I look at West Virginia's roster, the less excited I am by it. And after that, I don't really think anybody in the Big 12 is really situated to challenge them.
Right, like if West Virginia had Issa Ahmad for the entire season, or what, Elijah Macon doesn't leave early?
Yeah, I mean, their problem really is just, like, there's not a ton of depth. If they had Elijah Macon, they'd be in a much better position because they could play Kanate from the bench and whatever. But, like, with Macon gone, it just becomes much more difficult for them in terms of trying to play, like, 10 guys like they always want to. And it just gets so much weirder. So I thought, like, at the end of the season that they were probably going to be a team that would, you know, challenge them. They finished, like, one spot behind Kansas last year. And they always play them super tough
right.
at Allen Fieldhouse. Like, two of the last 3 years, I think it's kind of overtime.
They always win won. In Morgantown.
Yeah, they've won in, like, 4 straight years in Morgantown. Twice I've been there for it. And so, like, I thought that this would be the year that they would really challenge. But, like, their roster is probably not quite as good as I thought it was going to be in May.
How many people have been in college longer than Dexter Miles? Because there's
Javon Carter.
I feel like Miles have been there longer than Carter.
Well, I don't know if you remember this, but when I was in Lithuania, like I tweeted like that I was calling it Dexter Miles and like predicting Wisconsin over Kentucky. So he has been there forever. If I remember that, I mean, when I was overseas.
It's definitely true that I think everybody forgets that he was the dude that was like in the bathroom after yep. they lost to Kentucky and the reporters could not get them out of it. And so like, that's a fair point that he really is.
Was
like
he shitting
that,
his pants or was he scared?
No, it was after the game.
Yeah, it was after the game. He like didn't want to talk to the media after the game because of the guarantee that he made before the game.
And yeah, was he shitting his pants or was he scared?
I mean,
it's unclear.
It's tough to talk to a media when you lose by like 642 points.
Yeah, they got destroyed.
That's one team that did not need any bulletin
no,
board material.
No. No, not at all.
I mean, that's how old he is. They're like, these guys are now getting, like, extensions in the NBA, and he's still in college.
Yeah, the Big 12 is pretty loaded with old dudes at this point.
Yeah, like, Kansas is always good for one or two.
Yeah, Devontae Graham's pretty old, and I can't wait for all the – I can't believe he almost went to Appalachian State things this year. It's funny because, like, Svi is a senior, but he's only 20.
He's been around forever, too, though.
Yeah, except he's still, like, a kid.
Right. It's because he came to Kansas when he was, like, 14.
Yeah, it's very weird. It's very weird. But, yeah, there's plenty of old dudes around the Big 12. Baylor's got some old dudes.
Yeah.
Basically, everybody has old dudes.
So
the old guys' conference.
So, with that being said, obviously Kansas is going for, what is it, 14 straight now?
14 straight.
So Ben and we started to talk about this right before you came on, and I cut Ben off because I wanted to save it with you on here. Do they get enough credit for winning 14 games, or is it 13 years in a row, or is it just sort of overlooked at this point?
I think it's kind of hard to say, right? So much of what we think about with college basketball is the tournament, and there are I guess, like, rightful critiques of Kansas in the tournament, even though they seem to make the second weekend every year.
Yeah. It's because their average seed over the last, like, what, 5 years? Or
yeah, it's insane.
It's like one and a half.
1 point.
And there were some early, like, screw-ups with Self back in, like, the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
But since then, they've been pretty good for getting the second weekend usually. But that seems to kind of overshadow a little bit of the Big 12 dominance. And I think the other narrative that started to take over the Big 12 is just like, if the conference is actually good, how does Kansas win it every year?
Right.
Which is just like, I mean, the answer is that they play in Allen Fieldhouse and they rarely ever lose home games. And that makes it really hard to lose a conference that plays a double round robin. So like, yeah,
see, that's my argument.
Good.
That's my argument when for Kansas, I think it does get overlooked a little bit, is to me, the Big 12 and the Big East, that's the winner of the regular season is legit the best team in that conference because they play the same schedule as everybody else. Like, what was it? Like, the Big 10, there's always a team that takes advantage of a weaker schedule to win the Big Ten regular season. You see it in the ACC, things like that. To me, if you win the Big 12 or the Big East regular season, you are, with ease, the best team. I don't feel that way about the other four major six conferences.
Yeah, I think that that's now true. The one thing that people kind of like to throw back in response to that is that prior to the departure of Missouri and Texas A&M and bringing in West Virginia and stuff, they didn't play the double round robin.
Right, right.
So I guess you kind of take that for what that's worth in some ways. But, even then, it's still, seven straight or whatever, which is absurd. And 14 straight dating back – or 13 straight so far dating back to whenever. And, that's pretty ridiculous for anybody to do that in a major conference.
Does anyone else get annoyed that the Big – I mean, everyone does get annoyed by this, but does anyone have a solution for the Big 10 having 14 teams and the Big 12 having 10 teams? Because I don't want to call them the Big 10 because that's wrong. We just call them, the Heartland Conference. I don't know. Just change the name.
Well, the Heartland Conference was a thing back in the day, wasn't it?
I know. I've heard of it. I'm trying to think of some ideas here. The Big 10 can't be called the Big 14. That sounds stupid.
That sounds really stupid.
The Midwest Conference would be better. I don't care. I just need some difference.
Calling it the Midwest Conference would be awesome, if only to make Texas fans really angry. Oh, they'd be so mad.
Well, we have Rutgers and Baylor in Maryland now.
Yeah, I was saying, how great if the Big 10 was called the Midwest, and it's just Rutgers and Maryland start getting hot and winning the Midwest Conference.
Oh, yeah, Rutgers getting hot in the Big in the Midwest Conference.
Hey, don't sleep on Steve Peichel.
Peichel. Your guy, you love him.
I think the Rutgers comeback.
I think he's good. All right, so we're obviously going to focus on the Big 12. And there's going to be a legit amount of Kansas talk because, let's face it, they're one of the four best teams in the country this season heading into the year. And
when anyone thinks Big 12, you think Kansas.
Right, you think Kansas. And we talked about this right before we started taping. Who can beat Kansas? I don't know who can beat Kansas this year. And it's one of the few years I feel that way.
Yeah, I mean, the best bet is still West Virginia, right?
It has to be.
West Virginia is probably going to beat Kansas in Morgantown. That just seems to be a thing that happens now. West Virginia is going to play Kansas really tough at Allen Fieldhouse because Bob Huggins knows that they need to beat Kansas, and also has a bonus in his contract where he gets $25,000 every time they beat Kansas. So he has an incentive for them to be quite good. And he donates that money to cancer charities, which is totally awesome.
Yeah.
So they're probably the best team because not only are they the most talented team, but they kind of understand what it takes. Whereas I think with some of the other teams, they're just not good enough. I think if you have a conversation about who the third best team in the Big 12 is, you can come up with four or five different answers, and none of them are really terrible answers. And so it seems like the only logical answer is West Virginia, and then it's just is West Virginia really good enough to beat even what is not a super great Kansas roster? And I kind of think the answer right now is probably no, but they're certainly the team with the best shot at doing it.
What makes you think this isn't a super great roster? What are they missing?
I mean, they have three front court players, and one of them is Mitch Lightfoot.
Yeah,
and that's kind of a problem.
You got Azubuike, Lightfoot, and Preston.
Billy Preston, yeah. Who thinks he's a guard, I think. So, two and a half front court players, and Mitch Lightfoot's not even really a big. So, they're in a position where if they don't get Udoka Azubuike to play 25 to 30 minutes a night, they're front court is really awkward.
Right.
They're going to look like Dayton from a couple of years ago, just rolling out all dudes under 6'8".
I love that Dayton team. I absolutely love that Dayton team.
It was great, but none of the Kansas players can rebound, so they'd be in a lot of trouble. So, their lineup is just weird. And Self, I think, despite playing four guards last year, still wants to play big all the time. And so, they're going to be in this weird position of they don't really have the dudes to play big all the time, and are still going to want to do it. And I think that's the big question to figure out this year for them.
It's almost like the UNC situation as well.
Yeah. UNC consistently Kansas wants to play big, and now they have Luke May.
Yeah. Kansas at least has a big in Azubuike. The question is, can he be healthy and can he stay on the floor without getting in foul trouble or breaking rims? Cause he dunks so, so goddamn hard.
Yeah. He broke a basket in Italy when they were over there. It was pretty funny.
I mean, that dude,
he's huge.
why would you even jump with him at this point? Like, he's gonna he's gonna put your ass
on the poster.
He's massive. Yeah.
He's absolutely massive. He's gonna be super fun. I don't know how good he's gonna be. Like, he averaged like 10 fouls per 40 when he was a freshman in like the 13 games he played or whatever, but like,
how good does he have?
That's the problem. Well, like, he has to be good enough to stay on the floor. That's really all you need.
Right, like,
you
he doesn't need to be present. Up, right, he doesn't need to put up 15 a game or anything like that.
No, yeah. I mean, their scoring is still going to come from all of their guards and on the perimeter, but, like, you just need him to be on the floor, because if he's not on the floor, you're not going to have any type of interior presence on either end. And because, like, you know, Billy Preston and Mitch Lightfoot are tall dudes, but they're not, like, go guard another big guy.
Yeah, right. It's one thing to be tall. It's one thing to be tall and agile.
Yeah, or, like, physically strong.
Right.
And yeah, it's one thing to be those dudes. It's one thing to be short, and then there's just one thing to just be short.
Yeah, like, can you just imagine, like, either Billy Preston or Mitch Lightfoot trying to guard Mo Bamba? Like, Mo Bamba, like, has a relatively limited offensive game, but just, like,
good size-wise.
Got some news for you. We're probably going to see it.
I know. It's going to be great.
Now, Chris, who do you have as, like, a sleeper team to creep up in the top of the standings?
I feel like I know your answer to this.
Yeah, so I think it's probably TCU. Yep. Like, they're the team that I think...
You've been on them for a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure that you can really call them a sleeper, because they're legitimately good. But, like, because they're TCU and because they've been so bad, it's easy to consider them a sleeper because... You know,
because how many people still remember Jimmy Dixon is coaching there?
My favorite TCU thing was, like, they went 13-0 in the non-conference one year and played basically one of the worst non-conference schedules ever. And then everybody was like they got top 25 votes after in December before conference play started, and then they won, like, zero games in the Big 12. Like, they just tried to game the schedule to be even reasonably good. Right. And so I think this year, though, they're actually good. Jamie Dixon, clearly a good coach. He got a pair of basically top 100 point guards to run the offense for them. Vladimir Brodziansky is, like, actually good. He's somebody who I think people probably don't really know yet.
How much time is Fisher missing, though, going back to the top 100?
I think I saw that he got cleared to play.
He did, okay.
So I don't think he should miss much time at all.
That's key.
Yeah, I mean, they need that kind of two-point guard system to work, and Fisher's one of their only, like, real shooters that they actually have on the roster, because the rest of the team just, like, even Alex Robinson isn't really much of a shooter, so they kind of need him to at least be able to play off the ball and shoot a little bit. But I think that they're probably the team most likely to be a sleeper. I think, like, there's a pretty decent chance that Oklahoma's good. They were sneaky good last year in terms of I think, where – what their record was versus, like, what their numbers were. Yeah. So I think there's a chance that they're, like, a sleeper to be in the top half of the league, but, like, TCU is probably the sleeper that will maybe, like, wake up, finish third in the Big 12, and everybody's going to be like, how did that happen?
Right. You know, we talked about this a little bit, and it's the depth of the conference. You know, it's always rated super high on KenPom, usually is the best conference in America, and there's some truth to that, because I think when you look at the middle of the conference, the bottom of the conference, to the other Power Six conferences, that group is always better than, you know, we talk about Pac-12. It's always better than the Oregon States, Washington States of the world, SEC. It's always better than the Auburns and Missouris up until this year, and you know, all the way down the line. This year, it's weird, man. Like, you said it. Like, there could be five different teams to finish third. No one bats an eye. Do you think this is a deep conference, or is it just two good teams and a bunch of average teams?
I think that it's a bunch of, like, fringe top 25 teams for the most part, like, in the middle there. Like, I think TCU is probably fringe top 25. I had them 24th when I was doing top 25 stuff. Baylor, Texas, Oklahoma. All of those teams are kind of fringe top 25 teams. One of the things I do think that's different this year, though, is that there's, like, the potential to be some really bad teams, in my opinion. Like, I think Iowa State could be really bad, and I think Oklahoma State could be really bad.
Yeah.
And so, whereas in the past they've kind of been buoyed by, you know, maybe, like, TCU wasn't good in terms of its record, but it did have good efficiency numbers. Like, I think that there's a chance that Oklahoma State and Iowa State just have some really rough, like, rebuilding years this year. and that maybe like knocks them from the top of the KenPom perch or whatever.
Yeah, because I think Oklahoma State's just going to say on offense, you go score Jeffrey Carroll.
Yeah, I mean, they have some other pieces that are not totally terrible. Brandon Everett's, like, not super bad. He's a young point guard. They got a grad transfer from Cal State Northridge who averaged 17 a game, who's not bad. But, yeah, I mean, I think that, like, Jeffrey Carroll's clearly their best player.
Right.
And they don't have Juwan Evans, so I have no idea what they're going to do offensively at this point because last year it was just – yeah, like, and their school's under FBI investigation because of Fulmana, or at least, like, you know, the program is involved in the FBI investigation in some way because of Lamont Evans. So, like, I do think it's going to be a really weird year for them, but, you know, we'll see how good Jeffrey Carroll is, hopefully.
What do you think Iowa State looks like? You know, you mentioned Juwan Evans. My favorite player to watch last year, or last, really the last 4 years, was Monty Morris, who was one of the 3 to 5 best point guards in the country. And
he was absurd.
Yeah, and not only him, but you lose Deontay Burton, you lose Naz Long.
Matt Thomas.
Matt Thomas, yep. Yeah. So it's a whole new team. And with Prom as the head coach, he's whether it's been at, where is he, Murray State before and now at Iowa State, he's always had that, like, go-to guard.
Yeah. So I think it probably takes them a year, right? Yeah. They get the Lindell Wigginton kid.
Yep.
His last name's really hard to pronounce. He's like a top 50 recruit, solid point guard option. But I think it probably takes him a year to really get acclimated. They don't really have anybody back who is a relevant, like a significant rotation piece. They have guys who played last year, but nobody who really was like, you know, important to them, right? Obviously, Naz Long, Deontay Burton, Monte Morris, and Matt Thomas were kind of like their four guys.
Right.
And so, like, Donovan Jackson's back. He's okay. Simeon Carter's back. Solomon Young. Those dudes are all, like, okay players. But, like, I still think it's going to be another year before they're any good. And, like, next year, they have a chance to be pretty good because they're going to have Wigginton a year into his college career. They get Mariel Shaq from Virginia. They got this Zion Griffin kid who – like, blew up over the summer at some AAU tournaments in Kansas City and dropped, like, 30 points on some high-level recruits. And so,
that's
like,
not the Canadian
I think,
kid, is it?
No. He's this random kid from Chicago who's, like, 6'5" and plays center for his high school team and then showed up at these AAU tournaments and was like, I want to shoot threes, and just, like, destroyed everybody.
Love 6'5" centers.
Yeah. So he seems like he's pretty good. So I think that this year they're going to have a rough just, like, transition of trying to figure out, you know, what they have. They have, like, 3 grad transfers coming in, which is weird. And then they'll just kind of reload for 2018-19 and hopefully be good then.
So, obviously, Texas was able to get Mo Bamba, right? And Shaka Smart has, I would say, underachieved for the most part. If he doesn't finish in the top 4 this year, is he looking – on the outside looking in, or is the pressure started hitting them? What do you think's going on there?
I don't know if the pressure ever hits anybody really in basketball at Texas until you Rick Barnes for like 5 years. Like, he's got plenty of rope, I think, just because I don't know that anybody really cares about the basketball team there.
And they did invest a decent amount of coin into him.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they may just want to keep him around for that reason. I think he'll get, you know, a few more years before he figures it out. He's got a bunch of talent. Like, they have a ton of top 100 kids on their roster. I just don't know that they've figured out how to turn that into something on the court. Like,
it
could
helps
easily
when you have a point guard.
Well, for me, what's been so confusing is he really hasn't played the same style as he did at VCU at Texas. It's weird. Yeah. I don't know if he doesn't believe in his personnel, but it's been awkward. It's not the get up. The rhythm.
Was, last year he ran 2 bigs. Instead of running Jared Allen at the 5, he ran, what's the kid? Was it
Shaquille Clear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and you can't run that Havoc type defense with Shaquille.
Agree.
Clear.
All I'm getting at is that's not, he's not known to coach that way.
Right.
You know what I mean? So he's
right.
Going outside his realm, which has just been really, really confusing to me. If you're bringing in a Shaka Smart to Texas, change things up. What do you got to lose? Especially if you have a little bit of a leash, just cause havoc. Do something different. Obviously, West Virginia is a thing. It's not gonna be like teams haven't seen it. Maybe that's what he's thinking. But I don't know. I think he needs to get back to what made him successful as a head coach. Otherwise, he's just going to be this average Big 12 coach with Texas.
I mean, I think
I think both of those things are true. Like, one is that when he took the job, Cameron Ridley was his big guy, and that dude like couldn't run the floor.
No.
And last year he was stuck playing two bigs because they didn't really have the guards. But I also think it's true that like he's in a position right now to get all of the best players to play that Havoc system that was so good at VCU, and I just have no idea why you wouldn't take advantage of that, right? Like, he can go get all of the best like 6-7 athletes in high school basketball to come play for him and then just like destroy teams with that. And I'll be interested to see if he does a little more of that this year with like more of his players in the fold than he had the past couple of years. Cause I think that Ben, you're probably right that like, it's not clear that he has some other like trick in the bag that will work in the Big 12.
Yeah. I mean, he tried running a big offense, like you mentioned last year, big lineup. That didn't work. It just comes down to getting a point guard. The two things, really the three things that Smart needs at Texas to run his system, like you mentioned, you just need a plethora of like 6'6", 6'7", wings. You need the big that can get up and down the court. You can't have, you know, Cam Ridley out there. And then you need a point guard because when they get in transition, if you're not getting up the floor, you need to run secondary transition, similar to what we see with, like, Carolina. Right. And they just didn't have that. They're just walking turnovers without that point guard, and that's what we saw last year.
Yeah, and so now, like, obviously the hope this year is they have Matt Coleman coming in who can take over that point guard spot and kind of just, like, run the offense. You move Andrew Jones, like, clearly off the ball and just put him in a position where he can kind of create as a secondary guy. And you hope that you have a couple of guys who can become better shooters at the wing spots, and then you throw Mo Bamba at the five, and you have an incredibly talented starting five, and then it's just, can you turn that into something? Like, do you have enough shooting? Can Matt Coleman actually play point guard and not turn the ball over all the time? Like, this is a team that should theoretically be really, really, really good defensively, and that's at least, like, somewhere for them to start, and then it's just a question of just, like, how do you score enough points? Do you have enough shooters? Can you, like, just throw the ball to Mo Bamba at the basket because he's so much bigger than everybody else in college basketball? Just how do you find enough points to score? Because they should be really good defensively.
So they screwed me last year. Like, I was all in on Texas last year.
I wrote a piece before the season last year that was like, Texas is going to be awesome, and I'm all in.
They were terrible. 15th in my preseason rankings.
That's bold.
Oof. Last year. This year they're not in my top 25. Like, I would rather be wrong and put them like 32 or something like that. What do they have to do this year? Is it the offense? Is that what needs to be? I guess what's the bigger question and need here for them to? Because I think they are one of the more intriguing teams in the country. Not only just the conference, in the country, because you hear Texas, you hear Shaka Smart, you see Mo Bamba, you expect them to be relevant. What do they have to do? Is it offense? Is that the biggest thing?
Like, I mean, so I think that their baseline is that they should be good defensively, even if that good defensively is just like Mo Bamba is massive and blocks all of the shots at the rim. Like, that should establish a baseline for them of quality defense that's not bad. So then it's just a question of, like, how are you going to get your points? Is Matt Coleman a Big 12 quality point guard? Is Andrew Jones this guy that some people seem to think that he is, who's, like, you know, a potential NBA draft sleeper? Like, I don't think so, but maybe. If he can get out in transition, maybe improve his jump shot a little bit. Like, there's certainly enough athleticism and talent there. And then can you find enough shooting from the guys on the roster who are coming back, whether it's Eric Davis, whether it's Kerwin Roach? Does Dylan Ostakowski, the Tulane guy who's transferring, can he space the floor a little bit from one of the forward spots? Like, I think that there are a lot more questions about how the offense is going to work just because they're going to put the ball in the hands of a freshman point guard and they didn't shoot it so well last year. But that's the thing that I would be most concerned with, especially just given that Bamba should make their defense at least pretty good.
Right. So you mentioned that Bamba is obviously top seven draft pick.
Sure.
There are a couple other guys that you just mentioned that could potentially be a sleeper, get in there. Who are the NBA prospects? Because, you know, again, we kind of talked about this. Last year they had NBA guys. They've had NBA guys in this conference in the past. This year, outside of Bamba, who's the next, let's just say, who are the next three best prospects outside of Bamba?
Yeah, I mean, after Bamba, you really just get down to a bunch of guys who I think are probably fringe first-round prospects. So, like, Devontae Graham at Kansas is a potential backup point guard in the NBA. He can handle the ball, shoot it a little bit, and is a pretty good passer and will get in your shirt defensively. Javon Carter is another guy who's a potential kind of first-round guy, but he's going to need to keep shooting at a 38% clip or whatever he was last year, rather than the, like, 33% clip he was at the first 2 years of his career.
I'm going to hop in on Javon Carter, because when I hear Javon Carter, obviously you're going to remember what I remember in that last play of the NCAA tournament this year, where I bet he just wants to get back out there and prove, like, that the person everyone in the nation remembers is not him. So I look at Javon Carter as a guy who's going to have a huge year for West Virginia.
Well, he's
I think there's a good chance he's the Big 12 player of the year.
Then when I say huge year, he's not, like, he's obviously been a stud for them. I see him as player of the year as well, potentially.
He's already a step in the right direction, because I got a picture a couple weeks ago from someone of Javon Carter wearing a personalized National Defensive Player of the Year hat.
I love it.
Hey, I love it. So good. Like, that tells me he's ready to go. You go get a personalized Defensive Player of the Year hat and wear it out in public to a West Virginia football game. That's one of the best moves you can do.
Yeah, he's that dude, man. He's that dude. He's so awesome. So he's a fringe first-round guy. Svi Mykhailiuk is somebody I think everybody's always hoped would turn into an NBA guy.
He's
just never been there.
Mo Bamba, obviously.
Yeah, Bamba's obviously the cream of the crop. After that, I think it takes a pretty big drop. Like, I don't think Trae Young's a one-and-done type guy.
Yeah, I don't think anybody feels that way. He'd have to put, like, a massive showing on this year.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, like, I think Oklahoma has a chance to be really good, but they're going to need Trae Young to be better than Jordan Woodard was last year. Yeah. And that feels like a big ask, because Jordan Woodard was really good. But I will say that my favorite Trae Young thing is that I tweeted out a few weeks ago about how the Big 12 hasn't had a freshman average more than 18 points a game yet since, like, Calipari took the Kentucky job or something like that. And somebody mentioned that, like, Trae Young might do that. And Trae Young was, like, searching his name on Twitter and, like, went back and found the tweets to favorite them. So I'm, like, pretty hopeful that he's just going to, like, show up and chuck up 25 shots a game and try and score all the points.
I mean, Kruger will let him.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't really know that they have other dudes who can create offense on that team. They'll be pretty good defensively because Kadeem Latin's good. Kruger is a great coach. But they need somebody to score, and, like, Trae Young is certainly going to be allowed to do that.
So pretty much you just admitted you are bulletin board material now.
Oh, yeah, I'm in.
I love being bulletin board material.
Yeah, I try to keep a list of the people who favorite, who search their name on Twitter. Monte Morris used to do it after big games and retweet highlights of himself. I was a pretty big fan of that.
I got a lot of retweets from him and his family of me just being like, Monte Morris is my favorite player in college basketball.
The other Big 12 guy who does it is Nerencio Diassi at Texas Tech.
Oh, God.
What are you guys' thoughts on that? Like for me, like, I don't care if the family does it, but to me, when the player does it, it's like,
it's too much.
It's definitely weird.
Like,
it's definitely super weird. I wouldn't do it. I don't know. If I was a player, I probably just wouldn't read Twitter.
So, yeah, I mean, like, here's the thing. Like, I'd be lying if I said at some point I didn't search my name on Twitter to see what people were saying, but
yeah,
I would never, like, favorite it or
court shot like the asshole you are.
Well, no, they were all coming in. I didn't have to search anything. but like, honestly, like, I would read stuff, but I wouldn't favorite it or retweet it. So, like, I get why they do it, but to me, it's a really big deal when somebody, like, looks at their tweet and, like, I knew a lot of, like, hockey players that did it too, and we used to call them losers. First off, who watches hockey anyways? Are you guys big hockey guys?
Yeah, I can watch it. I mean, I get into the playoffs.
That's my little tangent. So we used to make fun of the people who search themselves.
I mean,
it's weird. It takes a commitment, right? To, like, you can search yourself, that's pretty easy, but it takes some real commitment to like start finding the ones that you want to like and the ones that you want to retweet. Like that takes effort and time out of your day.
Because what happens when you like retweet and the next game you suck? Like, are you, there's too much movement in that for me.
You're putting too much pressure on yourself to perform every single time.
Right. I do like the guys that will tweet and like clap back at people. Cliff Alexander a few years ago clapped back at somebody for tweeting a video of him like defending a ball screen, and he like screwed it up or something. And he was like, "What even is this?" And Cliff Alexander was like, "It's called hedging hard, man." It's
like, that's right. I mean, I love that Cliff Alexander is the one that clapped back. Like, that's the perfect guy to clap back.
Yeah.
I think my goal is to get like some college players tweeting at me and retweeting me this year.
I've had when Syracuse made that run to the Final Four, they had a walk-on. I'm pretty sure it was Syracuse, and he was just like, he had like the man bun and everything, and I made some comment, and like he just started like trying to like clap back at me, and I was just like, what the f-? Like, dude, I'm like, I was just like, it was like some generic comment too, like, look at this guy. And he was like, "Oh, I fucked your girl last night." And I was like, "Whoa, man! Like, you just took this to a whole nother level." I was like, "I just was pointing out the fact that you look ridiculous."
Yes.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah, I'm looking forward to find out who we got this year, who's keeping tabs on their name.
Who would be the funniest one? Who would be the funniest player to get like the random clapback from this year? Not just Big 12. All of college basketball.
The name that immediately pops into my head was Kyle Guy.
I feel like he would do it, though.
Yeah, I feel like if he did it, it would just be funny. Like, he would say something ridiculous.
Yeah, he would definitely take it over the top.
Connor Frankamp at Wichita State's a good one. Like, that's somebody I wouldn't expect to do it.
I would say Ethan Happ. And I don't know if it's just because I'm looking at Ben right now and I just see a white Wisconsin player, but Ethan Happ would be hilarious.
It'd be pretty funny.
One of my other favorites, though, and like when I say favorites because it's not my favorite, it annoys me, is the retweeting of highlights of yourself.
It's a bold move. Like, it's a real bold move to
isn't that kind of a douchey move?
It's a weird move.
Yeah, probably. It's a little bit like a self high five.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's better
look
than
at me.
The compliment. Like the written
You think it's
outline,
better than a compliment?
I think the highlights are less weird to tweet out than just like constantly like search your name, retweeting compliments only.
I don't know. The highlights are pretty weird.
I mean, maybe they know scouts are on Twitter or something, just getting all the film out there. Yeah.
That's
Somebody's
true.
Just getting
that's
their
true.
Scouts from the Twitter mixtape.
I mean, it works in NBA 2K18.
That's true. There you go. Right.
Well, let's jump into our picks. Standing.
Yeah, we got to go with our picks. Let's just go right in order, Chris. Who do you have 1 through 10?
Okay. Obviously Kansas number one.
Yep.
I'd go West Virginia number two.
All three in agreement with that.
I would take TCU third.
Okay.
I think there could be some disagreement there.
Yep.
I'll take a risk and take Texas at four.
Okay.
And then Baylor at five. And I think that leaves like Oklahoma, Texas Tech, Kansas State, Iowa State,
and then
Oklahoma State last.
Yeah. So, all right. So we're pretty much in agreement. Kansas, West Virginia, one and two. I have Baylor at three, Texas at four, Oklahoma at five, TCU at six, Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, Iowa State.
Yeah, I mean, I think anybody at the back there.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people think Kansas State might actually be good this year, and I don't see it.
I mean, it's still the same.
Credit to Bruce Weber. He's finished in the mid-pack of that conference basically since he's joined.
Yeah. He's found a way to keep a job, which is really, like,
he
more impressive than most people at that school.
He got another extension somehow.
It's the good stuff. You know, anytime you can just keep your basketball program totally mediocre,
that is a national championship level coach.
I mean,
never said recruiter.
Ben, what do you have?
I love the people.
Kansas, West Virginia, Baylor, Texas, TCU, OU, Tech, K-State, Oklahoma State, Iowa State.
So we all Carter have. So we all have Texas in the top four.
Yeah, and we're all gonna end up looking like idiots probably
when Kansas State finishes above them.
Carter as my player of the year. Carter Graham, Keenan Evans, Mo Bamba, and Kenrich Williams. Self as coach of the year.
I love that you're in on Keenan Evans.
Self as coach of the year because if you win 14 or 15 straight times, then you deserve to be the coach of the year.
Yeah, so I have.
Or maybe Shaka if he makes a run. But I was gonna look like an idiot on standings and coach of the year.
So I went with Devonta Graham for player of the year, just because Kansas has to win stuff here. I'm going with Bill Self, coach of the year. Same thing to me. Like I hate how coach of the year just defers to who was the biggest surprise and not necessarily who's just the best coach. For my all Big 12 team, I went Graham, Carter, Bamba, Bodazanski, and Manuel Akon.
Ooh. I think I would take Carter.
Forgot he's still around. Yeah.
So you're going Carter over Graham.
I would go Carter over Graham. I'll take Self too. Carter, Graham, Bamba, Bodazanski is probably right. And Keenan Evans is, probably Keenan Evans.
Keenan Evans.
That dude's going to average like 18 a game.
What what's your thoughts on Malik Newman? I want to go on that before I want to get into one thing, because I feel like I'm the only one that's like kind of high on Malik Newman.
I mean, everything that I've heard from people over the summer is that he's looked really good. He averaged like 32 per 40 during their Italy trip, which is stupid. It's obviously, I think, with him just going to depend on if his jumper falls, because he doesn't really do much else, right? Like, if he shoots threes at like a 38% clip, he's going to average some ridiculous number of points and look really good and make a bunch of people feel stupid. If he doesn't shoot it that well, then Kansas is probably going to be in a little bit of trouble because instead of being like a top five team, they'll be a top 10 team.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I think he's going to fit in really well because he's not going to have to handle the ball like he did at Mississippi State. He's going to get to play off of it. Devonte Graham will feed him passes and just like let him get shots up and, you know, if he knocks him down, he's going to be really, really good.
So I want to get into something now that I put out on Twitter yesterday, and Ben and I have talked about this briefly with Jordan Cornette. In response to ESPN canceling the 24-hour tip-off marathon, you know,
yes.
I want a day for college basketball to dominate, you know, like how the NBA owns Christmas now, kind of made it their
yes.
thing. I thought the 24-hour tip-off could be college basketball's Christmas.
Sure.
I think the key to that, though, is pushing the season back to start after first semester. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, the question is always just how do you get out of football's shadow, right?
Right.
And so I guess, like, pushing it back makes some sense. I do think you'd be in a weird spot trying to move March back. Because if you do that... Yeah, but then you start running into the NBA playoffs. And, like, I guess I get that, like, not everybody's watching Hawks Celtics on NBA TV or whatever. And
yeah,
people would probably watch the NCAA tournament. But, like, you still run into a decent chunk of that as a problem.
Right. Because I just think there has to be a way – because my thought process is, okay, we have less class during this time. Like, you can start it right after first semester ends for, like, you know, games and everything like that to where – you have a month essentially of no class to where you can play day games and can get travel in
right.
and everything like that, and it's, you know, you're not quote hurting these guys from the academic standpoint. Pushback I got was, well, you know, you're gonna lose money because people aren't gonna go to daytime games. It's like, well,
yeah,
they're already doing that now, so it's just a different time of the year.
Yeah, and it's weird because they're actually moving the schedule in the opposite direction, right?
They're moving it earlier. Practices are starting earlier. They're getting more court time. Time in the summer. Like it's the way hockey and basketball are right now. Like they both start. I mean, hockey obviously for NHL has started like last week. The NBA is starting. Is it next week already?
Yeah.
That's insane. Like even the NBA that used to start November 1st, now it's being moved all the way back to mid October, where I don't even know what's gonna happen next. They're probably gonna add more games, which is just stupid. I'm with Bobby with trying to do something different, just so it doesn't get lost in the shuffle of playoff baseball, football, college football, NBA basketball. College basketball is a good brand. It's just it's so easy for it to get lost in the shuffle when you have all these different, you know, people who probably worship their pro sports a little bit more than college sports, and that's just the truth.
Yeah.
There's too many college basketball games nowadays that are meaningless too. Like
it's bad.
Yeah, exactly. Bad games where you lose interest in. Shortening the schedule, but. If you shorten the schedule, then you got to move it away from the competition, which would go maybe looking better in the second semester. I don't know. I'm up for ideas, but we're trending in the wrong direction.
I wonder if you could just move some of the bigger games like earlier in the schedule, right? Like, so the Big 12 SEC Challenge kind of went the opposite direction and decided to play that in the middle of conference play to get away from football.
Yeah.
It's nice to have that breakup, but like even in November when the Champions Classic happens, like I feel like that gets a ton of people watching it, even though there's all this other stuff going on. But because the matchups are so big, like there's often two top 10 games basically,
right?
That like just everybody watches that anyway. So I feel like if you could move, you know, some of the bigger matchups into earlier in the season, like people are still going to watch those. I think that the problem, Ben, that you just said is that there's just like too many games and most of them aren't good.
Yeah, especially early on in the year.
Yeah. So, like, maybe you could just try to make some better games happen in non-conference play, but you have to incentivize ways for those games to happen. So, like, I bet you with this Nike tournament, right, like, we're going to get a bunch of good games out of that, and people are going to watch that.
That's an awesome event. Good thing Georgetown's not in it, at least made it competitive this year.
Yeah, that was pretty awkward.
Yeah, and now that I think about it, like, I really do believe that there is the right amount of college basketball games, but they're too spread out almost. Like if you look at the NBA schedule, those professionals are able to play 82 games with home and homes and back to backs and home and travel. Right. I'm not saying that college basketball should do that exact method, but if they wanted to shrink the season and start it later so it'd get more attention, you definitely could like not space out the games as far as you do today, where at times you're getting sometimes even a week off in between games, and even a week and a half before conference play late towards Christmas.
People will scream about classes though.
Yeah. It's very important to go to class.
I know. I mean, that's
the biggest hypocrisy of all of this shit.
The one thing they need to do is, I'm all in on this too, is one conference needs to adopt the max theory of playing football on Tuesday, Wednesday nights and just play Tuesday, Wednesday mornings. Like play in the afternoon on Tuesday, Wednesdays where
now students are missing classes. Great.
But each team plays home one game and away one game. So you only have two afternoon games as a team. But let's just say there's what, 16 teams? There's 32 games.
Look, here's the deal. At the end of the day, kids aren't going to that much class anyways when they're in school.
That's 40% of classes.
That's exactly. Kids who aren't even student athletes aren't going to all their classes.
I love
LaMelo Ball isn't even going to class anymore. He's homeschooling. He's going to be used to not going to class.
Yeah, that'll work perfectly.
I think, but some team, like some conference needs to do that. And I'm pushing the Sun Belt to do it.
Yeah, just trial it. Trial it in some.
Embrace Fun Belt.
Sure. Yeah, I would just rather the teams that are good would just agree to play each other more often in the non-conference. That's my fix.
Do you think we'll see more things like the Champions Classic, the CBS Sports Classic, the, you know, Crossroads? Do you
the
think
24-hour so. Tip-off not?
Yeah, I mean, I hope that we'll see some of those things pop up in different manners. Like, I think the Champions Classic is maybe up after next year, so hopefully they renew that.
I thought it did get renewed. I thought I saw that.
Oh, did it already?
I think so.
That's like one thing that I try to go to basically every year.
That was awesome.
It's really fun. I went to the first one when Kansas got destroyed by Kentucky. That was less fun, but it was still enjoyable. But I would hope that more people are willing to do that, and maybe we can renew some of these like older rivalries that, you know, the games have stopped getting played for. I think that would help too.
Yeah, for sure. Because like Kansas, Missouri, and Indiana, Kentucky should be playing every year.
Yeah, I'm in.
Georgetown, Syracuse.
They at least do play. Like Georgetown, Syracuse have been playing.
It's gonna stop though. I thought.
Oh, is it? I don't know.
They weren't slotted anymore from contractually for the home and home and all that nonsense.
I can see that. It's also just probably nobody's watched the last couple of years.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because those teams have been studling.
So,
yeah.
All right, we'll let you get out of here, Chris. Where can everyone find you?
They can find me on Twitter at Seastone Hoops, and most of my writing these days is over on Fansided.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on, man.
Of course.
All right, so that was our interview with Chris Stone. Thanks again for him for coming on and getting another perspective from a guy who has seen Kansas's dominance up close and personal.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on record saying this. Like, one of the places that I wish I would have been able to play at is Allen Fieldhouse.
Yeah.
Because that would have been so sweet. It's on the bucket list to go to. I remember I was at Madison last year for a football game, and I met somebody who was a Kansas grad, and he promised me – I mean, this was hammered at the bar. He promised me he could get me on to – courtside at Allen Fieldhouse, and I was so pumped in the moment. And then the next morning, I was like, "That schmuck's not going to get me on to Allen Fieldhouse courtside seats."
Absolutely not.
But yeah, that maybe we should, as we grow and as we do this live show outside Allen Fieldhouse.
Yeah, maybe there's like I'll tell you what, if there's a Kansas booster or a Kansas like
student
manager,
willing to anything.
Yeah, if there's a Kansas manager or booster listening to this. Holler at your boys because
we want to be there. Yeah,
yeah. We'll shout you out. Well, if you have a company, we'll put some sponsorship stuff on the live show out in Lawrence. I'm down for that.
Yeah, 10-4 on that.
Yeah,
I'm for
that. So I appreciate Chris for coming on. So some really good luck at a conference that's gonna be weird this year because they don't have those names like we've seen. Like last year, were they?
Almost like the Big Ten last year.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, like
you know
Mo
what
Bamba's
I mean?
The Caleb Swanigan type setup, where like that's the star of the league.
Even like with the Big Ten, it was just kind of across the board last year.
Yeah, like I guess Miles Bridges was like at least Mo Bamba would be Miles Bridges. Like Miles Bridges was a top 12 NBA prospect, freshman, really really good. Bamba's going to be similar to that. Though he won't put up the same numbers as Bridges.
No,
but
he won't put up those numbers, but he'll have a presence.
Right, for sure. So yeah, that's actually a good comparison because there's just not a lot of NBA talent there. Like there's a lot of fringe guys, and a lot of really good college players.
And just a lot of blit across the board.
Yeah, just a weird weird conference. So, again, remember to send in questions via the mailbag. For Sunday's show, which is going to be a demo run down at Queen City Exchange. Remember to let us know if you're coming, too, on either Friday, October 27th or Saturday, December 9th, because, I mean, we want to get drunk with people. We like hanging out.
Yeah. Hey, just me and Riggs.
Yeah. So, what else can we throw out there? Anything else you got?
Probably. I always think of this stuff literally right after we hang up.
Either way, follow Fundamentally SD on Twitter. Again, we're going to have a bunch of stuff coming up with the season going on, guests coming up, everything like that. So make sure you follow the show.
Big Ten preview next week.
Big
Got
Ten
a good guest
week.
Coming on yep. next week. Really nice guy. Knows his stuff. It'll be fun. And don't know. I'm really excited for the Big Ten this year. I think it's going to be a really good conference. It won't be ACC, but it will be good. It'll be better than last year, so
yeah.
That means it'll be good.
I still don't – I mean, it
might – I'm buying all of Purdue stock this year.
Yeah, I'm not.
I know you're not. I'm buying Purdue stock. Obviously, Michigan State will be good.
Yeah,
I'll buy
that stock.
I'm buying Chris Collins and Northwestern.
I'm buying Maryland stock.
You're buying Maryland stock? I'm not stock. Opposed to Maryland. I really like the three freshmen. Justin Johnson, Herder, and then
Justin Jackson, Anthony Cowan, and
Justin Jackson, and Anthony Cowan, yeah, and Herder. Really big fans of them. Penn State, like they could actually be decent this year. I know that's weird to say. They could surprise some people.
Michigan's
gonna be Michigan. Wisconsin's gonna be Wisconsin.
Here's the thing. I think when you look at the conferences, to me, there's a clear top two. The ACC is clearly the best. I think the Big East is clearly the second best conference this year, heading into the year. I think you can make an argument for almost any other conference, though, for third.
I guess time will tell.
Yeah. So, Big Ten preview next week. Live show coming up. Demo run this week. We need questions. Submit them. It can be anything for the season. It can be anything about us. We'll answer them all. We just need to do a trial run. We don't want to kind of waste a preview or anything like that with some guests that we have coming up, lined up for some other things. So, follow the show, Fundamentally SD on Twitter. And we'll see everybody Sunday night.